Welcome to Season 15 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go! Welcome back. I'm excited you're here. Season 15 moving right along. And this episode is similar to the last few episodes where I really wanted to get specific about covering topics that are important in leadership today. And this one is no different. Crisis management. And how to lead through a crisis. Because if you lead a team, if you lead an organization, if you lead at home, there's one thing that I am sure of. You will come across or have a crisis in your life of some kind. And this episode, I brought on Melissa Agnes, the author of Crisis Ready, to really break down what is a crisis, what is an issue, why should leaders care about it? If they happen in your world, how should you navigate them? I mean, Melissa was dynamite. We talked about stories of famous brands and small companies and individuals who had crises because of social media. I mean, we tell a lot of stories in this episode. So no matter if you're facing a current crisis today, I know there are things in this episode that you will be able to use. And that's why I really hope that you'll take a pen out or you'll get out Evernote and you'll take notes so you can either be prepared when crisis happens or you'll prepare for a crisis before it happens, because it'll be handled much better if you prepare in advance. So without further ado, here's my interesting conversation with my friend Melissa Agnes. Before we get to the show, people have been asking me, John, why don't you do more stuff on Instagram? Do more stuff on Instagram. So I've committed to doing more stuff on Instagram, sharing best practices. So it would mean a lot to me if you'd take a second, open Instagram, follow me at John G. Eads. I'm committing to sharing value there, just like we do on LinkedIn. So it would mean a lot if you'd take some time, follow me on Instagram at John G. Eads. Now on to the show. Melissa, thanks for being on the show.
John, thanks for having me.
Leading through crisis. Much of our audience leads a team, leads a company, has some ability to influence their organization or their team. How do you go about recommending people lead through a crisis?
Yes. So one of the best ways to even just put yourself in that situation to lead effectively through crisis, or even just viral issue management, is to start thinking about it beforehand. So when you define an issue versus crisis for your organization, every single business has a series or a set of high impact, most likely issues and high impact, most likely types of crises that they're the most prone and vulnerable to. We all have those. Whether you're a business of one or, you know, a mega global brand, every business is susceptible to risk. And we all have those series of, you know, high issues and crises that we're the most prone to. Identifying what those issues and crises are to your organization now gives you a head start. So one, you're not taken aback or you're not caught by surprise for things that are the most likely to strike your brand. And then once you've done that, so one thing that kind of shocks me often is that I've never actually come across an organization at the beginning of working with them where leadership has this consolidated list of each one of their stakeholder groups. So typically in a business, everybody knows who they own the relationships with, you know, whomever those stakeholders are, and that they know how to manage those relationships. They deal with them on a day-to-day basis, but I've never come across leadership that has this consolidated list. And yet in crisis, so business is about people. Crisis management is about people. Effective crisis management, being crisis ready, means that you're in a position to really connect closer and meet expectations in complicated, you know, not so positive times. So who those people are and why they matter to your business and what they will expect of your organization, if you understand that now, you're able to, one, anticipate needs and questions and concerns and demands, and two, put your team in a position to be able to anticipate and meet those expectations as well.
It's kind of fascinating because if you break that down, you know, you are essentially saying start with anticipating those crisis or elevated issues that could face your team or organization. And I think everybody, if they just took 5 to 10 minutes, could come up with a list of what those things are. Like, our software platform could go down, or it could be hacked. I mean, we could easily put 5 or 10 things on a whiteboard or on a list that could happen.
Yes.
Now, I've had crises, both or issues, elevated issues in the business or even in personal life, and I tend to kind of go right into that mode. I don't even think about it. I just kind of do it naturally because it's what's in front of you, in front of me. Is that a natural thing that's just a John thing, or is that an everybody thing?
It's definitely not an everybody thing. I mean, human nature, as humans, we're also different. So often, you know, some people just by nature or naturally, they panic, or they flee, or they, you know, get hysterical versus exactly. So for me, as, you know, personally, when crisis strikes, I get very calm. I get very procedural, even when it's an emotional situation for myself, like a personal type of situation. Mm-hmm. And I just see all of the puzzle pieces come together, and I know what needs to happen in order to get us through. And again, to get us through in a way that makes this an opportunity to connect closer with those who matter in that moment, or who may be impacted from that moment. So it's not necessarily just a John thing. I do think that, well, from what I've seen, strong leaders have this ability. However, it's a muscle that needs to be exercised. It's not something, the more you think about it beforehand, the more prepared you are, because you've thought through the different dynamics, the different impacts, the different strategies of response, the different risks for each of those strategies. It's a process, and it's not one that you want to do in the heat of the moment, because even the strongest of leaders in crisis is emotional time. Whether it's because it's impacting, you know, people you care about, whether it's because your team is frantic, whether it's because your business that you care about is in jeopardy, there's emotions that no matter what will impact us in crisis. So you don't want to leave the comprehensive thinking and, you know, the now is the time to kind of put through. We have the advantage now of thinking through from a logical perspective without having emotion interfere with that logic, if we take that time to do that now.
It's fascinating because I'm not an insurance guy. Okay. But in many ways, planning beforehand for something like this and getting that list out and trying to figure out with a team or with a company or with the people that would be responsible from a crisis perspective beforehand, I mean, I know how big of an advantage you would have if you thought of it in a rational way before those emotions were so high. Like, think of American Airlines, right? You know, some of these pulling, you know, a couple of months ago, the guy was pulled off of a plane. American would crush me for that one. but United, right? I mean, in some ways, they should have known that pulling someone off a plane is something that could become either an elevated issue or a crisis if it's that bad. How they respond to that situation, there's something that for a long time we've taught, and I learned from some great people called Tim and Brian Kite, E plus R equals O. Event plus response equals outcome. So what you're basically saying, if I get you correctly, is events are going to happen.
It's how we respond to those events that will ultimately produce the outcome. And if we've planned for that response, we're much more likely to have a better one.
Yes. And I'll go a step further. And this is where the passion, my passion lies, is if you want to take United as an example, United has a cultural crisis. United's culture. So I said earlier, one of the crisis ready rules is people above process and bottom line always. United's culture, unfortunately, is process and bottom line above people always. So when we go to the root of the problem, the fact that if we think of the flight attendants who made the call to call security, who onto that flight to get Dr. Dow off the flight, who then, you know, security escalated that situation just brutally. And of course, another one of the crisis ready rules is always assume there's video. So of course there was video. So that situation just started at a highly escalated level. It was just a terrible situation from the get-go. But if we look at, if we go deeper than that, if United's flight attendants, they were following process. So for them, their culture is process and bottom line above people. Had they thought about people first, had they been empowered and rewarded for thinking about people first, that whole situation, calling security onto the plane as a first step towards the mistake would not have happened. They would have been empowered to think for themselves and probably think of different solutions to that one problem rather than just simply, okay, this dude is being resistant. The process is we call security. So we can't think for ourselves and we have to call it security. And this is what happened as an outcome. Mm-hmm. Now, we go a step further. And so there's this thing that I've coined the crisis response penalty. And that is the reputational and or monetary impact of a crisis on a brand as a direct result of an ineffective response to the crisis. And so the CRP, the crisis response penalty. And if we look at that exact scenario with Dr. Dow, it took United 2 days to come out with an effective response. And in the span, over the span of those 2 days, they also watched as their market capitalization dropped by $1.4 billion. So if we look at that through the lens of a CRP, that's a $700 million a day mistake for not, you know, for every day that they did not respond effectively. So there's this whole encompassing, you know, the root of the problem, which the problem wouldn't have happened in the first place had they had the right culture, had they been crisis ready. And then had they been crisis ready on top of that, they would have responded effectively right from the start and they wouldn't have, you know, suffered as, and that's just one look at the consequences they suffered. They would not have suffered a myriad of repercussions as a result of their ineffective response.
It is honestly fascinating because they're all of these things that, They impact brands, Melissa, and companies, but they're so consumer-driven, many of the crisis and the issues. Like, there's things that the general public is fascinated by. I mean, it feels like when the smallest thing happens, this microphone starts because of social media, and it's like a pile-on effect of consumers. Do they really care that much? Probably not, but it's like but it's so easy to just continue to jump on that bandwagon. So it almost starts from this consumer social media point of view, and it gets to the largest brands in the world. But it's not just for the largest brands in the world, is it?
No, it's not. And you know what? I would say that. Okay, so we talked about, you know, how do leaders lead in times of crisis, and understanding the emotional relatability of a situation is essential for leading in times of crisis. And to your point where you
hold on, you got
to
break that down. What does that mean?
So I will. So you just made a comment about do consumers care that much? Probably not. The reality though is that there's kind of two facets to that. So for example, let's look at what Starbucks just went through. Did you see that, where two black men were arrested for waiting for their friend to arrive before they ordered coffee? Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, always assume there's video. This was caught on video. And all of the white people who were around watching this happen, you can hear them on the video and they're saying things, I'm paraphrasing, but they're saying things like, I'm white, I'm here waiting for my friend. Why aren't you arresting me? Why are you only arresting the black guys? So this situation in this case looked at, we have this societal crisis right now that as a society, we are deciding to collectively manage. And one of those, we have a few, but one of those is racial discrimination. Mm-hmm. We've decided collectively, we've kind of become aware of this reality to the extent that it is, and we've decided collectively that we're not going to stand for it anymore. Starbucks was caught in this. That was, so people did care because of this societal issue and this societal trend. On another hand, we could look at, so, and now I will come back to the emotional relatability. We can look at, do you remember what happened to Crock-Pot a few months ago?
That was the This Is Us,
yes,
story. Yeah.
Yes.
Show's incredible, by the way.
So I didn't even know about the show until this happened. And I wake up and, oh, so let's put, you know, Crock-Pot. Crock-Pot wakes up. And for listeners who don't know, the show This Is Us, wildly popular television show, finally reveals how one of their main characters, Jack Pearson, the patriarch of the family, dies. He died because, and this segment, it's a 5-minute segment. I highly recommend you go watch it. It is this emotionally, beautifully crafted story where, you know, Jack goes to bed. He finishes cleaning the kitchen. I have chills just thinking about it. And he's got the crock pot on. He's got a generic slow cooker on, not even a crock pot machine. And it short circuits, puts flames to the house, and he dies of smoke inhalation. So if we think about the consumers, the, you know, viewers of this show, they're sitting there. They are so emotionally compelled by this beautifully crafted story. And then all of a sudden, their mind goes to, oh my goodness, I have a crockpot machine. I don't want my family to die. I don't want this to be my reality and for it to set, you know, flames to my house and for my family to die. As a result of that, so the emotional enticing, you know, ness of the story, and then adding in that relatability factor, Crock-Pot, who wasn't even featured on the show, woke up the next day to a viral escalating situation where people were so emotionally compelled and so fearful of this happening to their family that they were threatening to throw out their crockpot machines that they've had for decades or, you know, passed down from generations and deciding to collectively boycott the brand. As a leader, so we have two, and I'm painting these both of these situations for a specific reason. So on one hand, we have this emotional connection to a societal trend where enough is enough and we're not going to stand for it collectively anymore. We are not going to allow innocent people be wronged based on gender or racial, you know, or race or ethnicity, all of these things. And on the other hand, we have this highly emotional story that then is brought to us in relatability by saying, oh my goodness, this could happen to me. Two completely different situations, two rising issues that could very well escalate to crisis level, two organizations that responded brilliantly with emotional intelligence. And as a leader, that's what you need to be able to detect, understand, is that if we look at Crock-Pot, if they could have come back, or a lesser brand would have come back and said, you know what, you're being irrational. In the history of Crock-Pot, we have never set, you know, our machines are programmed to not short circuit and set flames to your house. Stop being ridiculous. This mm-hmm. is not going to happen. But instead, from a leadership perspective, Crock-Pot turned and they understood that you can never trump emotion with logic, another crisis ready rule. And they said, we need to validate their emotions in order for them, we need to get into their hearts in order to get into their minds. So what they did from an emotional intelligence perspective in their response was they didn't come out and say you're irrational. They didn't even come out and say this could never happen. First and foremost, they came out and said, we hear you. We are so devastated that this is how Jack died. Our hearts are broken with you. So they met their consumers from an emotional perspective, they validated their emotions. And then they said, but we also, and I'm paraphrasing all of this, but we care about this not happening to your family. And just so you know, in the history of Crackpot, this has never happened because our machines are designed to not let this happen. And here are, you know, studies and facts to prove that.
Mm. It's just, it's amazing to think that there was, I was listening to something recently and it was talking about how limited time that we have on Earth. We're all one doctor's appointment away. We're all one stoplight away. We're all one phone call away from kind of our world being turned upside down or changed dramatically.
Yep.
And the same goes here with crisis, right? We're even brands are not immune to it, small or large. We're one phone call. We're one, you know, commercial, we're one movie away from having our world turned upside down, and we have literally no control over it. And I think that scares people, but it's reality, isn't it?
It is reality. And, you know, even if you have nothing prepared and you feel unprepared, if you always manage any type of negative incident in a way that connects you closer or strengthens the relationships that you have that make your business run, then you're stepping in the right direction. It really, really is all about people. People are what enable your business to be successful. People are who matter when crisis strikes.
A good friend of mine says he wrote a book called People Over Profit. And I think that whole idea of keeping people at the core all the time, and even more so in crisis or elevated issues, is just an incredible image that all leaders should think about, because the default thinking would be going right to the bottom line, right? What's this going to cost the business? What's this going to cost me? Versus the other way around. And that's why your work matters so much, Melissa. I can't help but just think to, many people are not going to prepare in advance for crisis. You can shout from the mountaintops. We could have a podcast every week, and I might still not be fully prepared for a moment of crisis in my business. If that moment happens to one of our listeners today and they're not prepared, what advice would you give them?
The biggest piece of advice would be what I just said, is to focus on the people and take steps, take action and communication steps to just right wrongs and strengthen relationships. You know, that's a very, very powerful driver. The other thing that I would say is, there's so much to say, but is to know that a successful crisis management requires effective and simultaneous action and communication. So it's not just about what you do behind the scenes, and it's not just about how you communicate with those who matter to your business. It's both of those actions and communication, taking the right course of action in both of those elements simultaneously, that is how you succeed in crisis management. And we can look at cases like Wells Fargo, for example. When, you know, you mentioned them earlier, when the crisis happened, they had a brilliant crisis communication team that, you know, used all the right language, used all the right words, used all the right, you know, sentiment. But the reality was that they could say whatever they wanted. They could shout it from the rooftops. They took out ads in magazines and newspapers. They could do all of that. But until they actually took the right actions behind the scenes, those communications meant nothing. Mm. And at the same time, the flip side, we look at things like Domino's Pizza. This is a dated one back in 2009, but it's one that comes to mind right now. When it was one of the first incidents, or it was the first incident of video being taken of disgusting things happening to the food mm-hmm. Before it went out on delivery, and the story went viral. back then, Domino's did everything right behind the scenes. They did everything right in terms of caring and the actions that they took and taking it seriously and making sure it never happened again. But they forgot, and they actually back then they didn't realize that they need to communicate in a way that that is stronger than what needed to be communicated in the past. And as a result, they took a major hit on their brand equity because they did not do those two simultaneous things. So focus on, you know, doing what's right for the people who matter to your business internally and externally. And remember that doing what's right requires both effective action and effective communication.
Awesome stuff, Melissa. It happens on the personal side too, which I think is so interesting here. It's so easy to tell the stories of the brands that we've heard of or we've experienced, but how those brands responded were the direct actions of people, and the leadership of those individuals in those companies that were making decisions. And it's so often to just think like a brand isn't about people, and it is. And it goes to that personal side too. I mean, there's so many stories of crisis happening to individuals as well. So I want to kind of close with this idea of if you are a solopreneur, or let's even go beyond that. You work inside a big company, but personal brand has become so important in today's world. How should an individual think the same way as a big brand?
In terms of themes that we're talking about, yes. And we saw it. I mean, Justine Sacco is a case that comes to mind where she's originally from South Africa, and she was a director or a VP of comms for a major brand, and she was about to get onto a plane, and she tweeted sarcastically. She tweeted, I'm paraphrasing, but she tweeted, "I'm going to Africa. Hope I don't get AIDS. Oops, just kidding. I'm white." Something like that. Mm-hmm. She tweeted that. She had a total of, I think, 180 maximum followers. And she tweeted that. She got onto her 13-hour flight. By the time she landed, that tweet went so far viral that she landed to not having a job anymore. She landed to people waiting for her at the airport to take her picture and to tweet about it and to show that she was there. The story had gone outrageously viral. And one, in her defense, she did not mean it literally. She was mocking ignorance, really, is what she was doing. But you can't express that in a tweet. You can't express that in a tweet that doesn't give context. Mm-hmm. And you can't defend yourself in real time when you're on a 13-hour flight and you have no idea this is happening because you're not connected to the digital world. So just to say that absolutely we can make mistakes as personal brands that affect our business that we work for, and more importantly, our own livelihood, our own reputations. And so it's a little bit of a different game, but in terms of framework and, you know, themes, again, it's about people, it's about relationships, it's about action and communication, it's about thinking before you do. You know, in Justine's case, that would have been great. Mm-hmm.
What's the guy on YouTube? Paul. Anyways, he shot a video in China, and you know, it was like a huge uproar about this video and shooting someone that was, you know, I think they were deceased, and it was crazy. And this guy has millions of YouTube subscribers, and, you know, how he responded to that situation was negative. And so he lost many, you know, it is, as we move to personal brands being so much more prevalent and important because of social media, I think people need to be educated on the personal stuff as well, because it can happen to someone with 150 Twitter followers.
Exactly.
And that means it can happen to anybody.
It can, unfortunately. And also fortunately, because when something happens, you have two options ahead of you. You, especially when it comes to issue management, because it's not crisis level. You can respond in a way that chips away at the trust and the credibility and the reputation of whether it's your personal brand or your organization. Or you can respond in a way that actually adds to your bank of stakeholder trust and the credibility and the, you know, the, all of these beautiful things, the goodwill within your organization or your personal brand. And we all have those. We all have those two options when something beyond our control happens. It's about which one you choose and whether you're prepared to effectively act on the right one, which is, you know, let's add, not detract. So.
Where can people find out more about your work, the book?
MelissaAgnes.com. It's a one-stop shop. You'll find access to or links to my new book, which is Crisis Ready, Building an Invincible Brand in an Uncertain World. You'll also find access to videos and blog posts and podcasts and just so hundreds of, you know, articles and different things to help you become crisis ready, as well as some resources and, of course, my links to social.
We'll make sure to point people in the right places. Melissa, your work matters probably more. You could argue that it's always mattered, right? I mean, the crisis and issues have always happened in organizations and with personal brand. But because of social media and because of how quick stuff can go viral, it feels 100 times more important today than it ever has. And so I know your work matters. I so appreciate you taking the time to come on and discuss this really important issue for our audience.
Thank you. Well, thanks to you, John. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for joining us on another week of the show. If you like this, do me a favor and share it with a colleague or a friend, or leave a comment, review, and recommendation wherever you listen to podcasts. Anything that would help us spread the message of leadership, it would mean a great deal to me in my heart. Until next time, be a good leader at work and at home.